This is Linz.
This is Russ.
And we're married.
Are we?
Yep, since 2013.
We're the hosts of the Unfiltered Union podcast,
where we discuss popular headlines and interview interesting people.
Our opinions may vary, but we will never censor our guests or our viewpoints.
Welcome to the Unfiltered Union. Have a new guest.
Yay.
We have Ilias Moscano with us, and he grew up in a conflictive household in Venezuela, and life always felt safer in his own head. When he left home to study abroad, he did not realize he was bringing along invisible wounds of trauma and all the coping mechanisms he learned as a kid. It took a miserable college experience, moving countries again, and a marriage and a divorce, a wonderful therapist, and the discovery of psychedelics as tools for mental health for him to start piecing together the puzzle that held the answers to who he was. So today, he can say that putting the effort to finding himself as the single most meaningful decision of his life, and he has reaped the benefits of it on a daily basis. He now dedicates his life to offering others guidance as they navigate their own process of self-discovery and self-connection, focusing on the safe and responsible use of psychedelics as powerful tools for the exploration of the psychological, emotional, and spiritual landscape that hold the secrets to who we are. If you didn't get that from the introduction, this is going to be a mixture of both mental health and talking about tools for how to overcome some of those mental health angst, if you will. I mean, the idea of using psychedelics is something that, Russ, we have talked about previously during your OCD experience.
Yes.
And I think this is going to be a very interesting conversation.
For sure. And before we do jump in, you have a business that is dedicated to coaching through psychedelics. How do you actually pronounce that name?
Yeah, the name is pronounced Curasana. Okay. So it's Curasane. And the name, it's the combination of two Spanish words that mean to heal, kind of in different ways. And so I have a website, it's curasana.com. And that's where I provide my services and coaching and guidance around psychedelic experiences.
All right.
Wow. I mean, let's start from the beginning. Let's try and start from the beginning. How was your home life growing up?
Yeah. So, you know, my parents were an incredibly conflicting couple. They were just not meant for each other is the reality. And so I think during that time, you know, growing up, there was a lot of anxiety and a lot of trying to kind of escape that experience of them fighting and just discussing. And, you know, there was, it was not as, you know, it's not horrible, but as some other experiences of childhood are. And I find myself lucky in that I always had everything that I needed in, you know, in order to kind of become the person who I am today, very privileged in certain ways. But it was certainly, I would say, a traumatic experience in a lot of ways to kind of grow up with that constant conflict. And so I ended up developing certain mechanisms of just kind of disconnecting a little bit from everyday life and living in my head and not fully showing up in relationships in ways in which later I realized, you know, I didn't realize that when I was growing up, but later on in life, it became obvious that I had developed certain patterns that were just not going to serve me in the long term.
Yeah, it's crazy how much childhood trauma can really impact us through our entire lives, right? Things that maybe some people would say, oh, that's not really traumatic. It's like, yeah, but to me, yeah, it was.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, yeah. Is people tend to discount other people's trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good.
Right.
You know, it right. Just because you went through a situation and it didn't mess you up like it messed me up, that doesn't discount the way I'm feeling.
For sure. And I mean, you develop ways to deal with it. I mean, what ways would you say that you feel you built coping mechanisms around all that to deal with it? How do you feel you cope?
Yeah, well, I'll speak a little about that, but just on that point that you said about how people can interpret your own trauma, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Gabor Mate. He's got a few books around trauma and also a couple of things like ADHD and addiction. And the way that he speaks about it is, and I really like this, is trauma is not what happens to you, but it's what happens inside of you as a result of what happened to you. And he makes a really good point about sensibility. It's people have different levels of sensibility. There's people that are more sensible than others. And so if you think about trauma, you know, a way of imagining this is if I just kind of touch you right now on your shoulder and just kind of push a little bit, you're going to feel it, but it's not really going to hurt. But if tomorrow you go to the beach and you get sunburned and it's really bad, and then I exert the same amount of pressure, you're going to have a very different reaction. You're going to be so much more sensible to that. And so different people react to different experiences in that way, which is what makes, you know, each individual case so interesting and so, you know, so real for the person who experienced it. Definitely in my experience was that I realized at around 30 years old that I had no idea what I liked, who I was, why I was doing the things that I was doing. Like it's like waking up, and when people call it waking up, that's truly what it feels like. It's like I open my eyes and I'm like, you know, when you're driving and for like 15 minutes, like your mind is somewhere else. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh God, was I driving? Was I lost while I was, what I should have been paying attention? Yeah. That's kind of what it felt like. And I was, you know, 31 years old already into this experience, in a marriage that was not serving either of us, in a, you know, with a career that I had not really chosen, just kind of had fallen into it, with a group of friends that I didn't connect with, living in a place like even geographically that I didn't really like or enjoy. And so like all of this big pieces of my life, I was like, how did I put this together? Like, who did it for me? And eventually I had to accept that it had been me, because that experience of disconnecting from reality, of not truly being present because of the things that I grew up with, that coping mechanism of just kind of going inwards and numbing out, had just kind of kept going for years and years unchecked. So that was the experience of that, that finally kind of made it so that I was like, oh, something's happening here. I need to fix it. And it took a lot of difficulty and kind of realizing that some things were truly not working for me, some addictions, like true troubles in the marriage, for me to be like, okay, this needs to be addressed. I won't lie and say that it was quick or easy.
Oh yeah. But I find it interesting. Everybody that we talk to that has a mental health struggle, it all seems to always compound to a point to where it's a breaking point. Every single situation that I've seen, mine, including mine, it was a snap. And then it's like, oh, we got to go and do something about this. Because if we don't, we're going to end up in a bad spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the phrase, if people don't change when they see the light, they change when they feel the heat. You sometimes have to kind of hit that rock bottom, and that also looks different for everyone, just like trauma looks different for everyone. But the thing that makes you say, this cannot be the life that I'm living.
Wow. Right.
Ooh, I like that a lot. Yeah. Ooh. Well, we mentioned that you started therapy on your mental health journey. What do you feel led you to that moment, led you to seek therapy?
Yeah, well, let me open up a little bit about that. And that's, you know, just kind of peel some of the layers. But I was struggling with addiction, and it wasn't substance addiction. It was actually a behavioral addiction. It started with pornography, and then it evolved into full-blown sexual addiction. I think that's something that a lot of people, definitely a lot of men, struggle. You know, I don't know one man who can be honest in my life personally, who says that they haven't struggled or currently struggle a lot with pornography. And that was a path that for me started very early on, like it does for a lot of people. And that started leading to just kind of that bleeding into my day-to-day life. So compound that with being in a marriage where I wasn't happy, and then starting exploring, it's like, well, what happens if I push that outside of the relationship? And ended up kind of becoming a serial cheater, very disconnected from that, started living in a life, like a life of complete lies, truly a double life, where as soon as I had some time for myself, I would start scheming, like truly the behavior that you see on somebody with substance addiction. And since I've learned through my training and, you know, through coaching and and a lot of other tools, a lot of the training that I have, that addiction is addiction is addiction. They express themselves differently. They have different consequences, but the addictive mentality will drive you to do those things that separate you from your real self, especially if you're already disconnected from it. And for me, it was that way in which it presented. And when I realized that I was losing control of how I wanted to act, I never thought of myself as a cheater. I never thought of myself as somebody who would lie, definitely not at those levels. And again, that wake up moment of like, I could see myself driving in autopilot, just going through the motions. And there was a part of me that was trying to pump the brakes, like, don't do this. This is not something that you want to engage in. This is just don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And being completely unable to control myself. And so that was the moment where it's like, this is hurting me, is hurting my partner. It's unrecognizable as I don't know who I am anymore. Like, I truly don't know who I am now. And that was the moment that for me, I was like, I need to start therapy immediately. And so I started working with somebody who was a sex therapist and could help me kind of manage and understand truly what was happening for me, like what addiction was, why I was experiencing what I was experiencing. And even though I carried an enormous amount of shame because of my behavior, she started helping me understand that was, I'll say, natural, as in when you're so disconnected and such in pain, your body will automatically try to look for something that helps you feel better, even if it's a completely negative behavior in the long term. And so kind of removing a little bit the shame around having acted, you know, so horribly for such a long time. And that's kind of where the journey really started. What I would say, the journey to recovery.
You know, that's a really good point too, is pornography can be an addiction too. A lot of people don't consider things like that an addiction, because it's like, well, I'm not doing anything that's hurting my body or what, you know, I'm not doing
like alcohol,
drugs.
Yeah, drug, yeah, yeah.
I'm not doing drugs and I'm not stealing from my family to do drugs or, but it's still an addiction because you're still using that as a vice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Addictions, you know, an addiction is, it's a short-term behavior that feels positive and that on the long term, when left unchecked, will have negative consequences. But it starts out as sometimes a lifeline, like this thing that's like, I need this to breathe. I need this to make my life a little bit better because I'm suffering. And so you try masking that suffering, but eventually if you don't get it under control, then it becomes what it becomes. It can be substances, it can be sugar, it can be, you know, phones, like screens. Like, we can get lost in anything, other people, anything.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me a lot of the OCD, don't seek reassurance, because it's an immediate feel.
Dopamine hit.
Yeah, it's an immediate feel of relief, and then all it's doing is damaging you.
Yep.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's what you feel you need, absolutely. But it's only hurting more.
Right, right. It's not doing anything but causing harm.
Yeah. And I imagine that you've experienced a lot of that, Russ, where like you wanted to, like, it's this search for what's the thing that's going to make it feel a little bit more tolerable, right?
Oh, yeah. And asking Lynn's, hey, I'm not that kind of person, right? And she would, at first, she would say, no, of course not. But once I started going to therapy and the OCD therapist was like, hey, you don't do that because that's bad.
Reassurance is not what you need.
Yeah, reassurance is gas on the fire. It's not going to make OCD any better. It's actually going to make it worse because you're just confirming to your brain that your fear is valid.
Creating those neuron pathways that say, yes, be afraid of this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Well, when in your experience did you start to, when did you discover and or start to utilize psychedelics through your mental health journey?
I was very lucky that as I was starting therapy, I had my, that I had my first psychedelic experience after I had started therapy, because what we're hearing about psychedelics so much right now, you know, there's a whole renaissance, as it's called, like truly this new wave of using them for mental health. And I think that it can be very easy to lose track of the fact that what's making them very useful for mental health is not just a psychedelic, it's the way in which they're used, it's the method, and it's the fact that there is integration or processing after a journey that it's done with a professional. Like it's a tool, and you can use a hammer to build something beautiful or to, you know, destroy a wall. And in the same way that, you know, that's what tools are. So when I discovered psychedelics, I did it because I was listening to a podcast where they had a mycologist. He's called Paul Stamets. And I've since heard of a few people who listened to that particular episode. And he was talking about psilocybin, which is the ingredient in magic mushrooms. And he is such a salesman in a way. Like, he truly, he's captivating when he speaks. He's also in the documentary Fantastic Fungi. If you guys haven't watched it, I highly recommend it to anybody listening. And I just, as soon as that podcast ended, I was like, I need to figure this out. How can I get my hands on some of this? And I didn't really have any contacts, or I didn't know. It was not my world at all. And I was so scared to try to find somebody who would sell them to me or anything like that, that the easiest way for me to do it was like, I'll just find the spores and I'll grow them. I'll grow my own mushrooms first. And that seemed easier than finding somebody on the street who could like help me out.
Seems and more I did, legal, maybe.
More legal. Yeah, technically, because I'm not buying it from anyone. The spores are actually legal in most states. And so that because the spores don't contain psilocybin. So you can actually buy the spores. And if you go through the trouble of learning how to do it, then you can grow them. Technically, don't consume them. It's just for science. It's just for mycology. And so, yeah, it was great because as I started consuming them and having this really strong experiences, I was trying to kind of model my experiences after what I understood was being done at the universities, right, with all this research that was coming out. But the truth is that I wasn't exactly sure of what I was doing at the very beginning. But then I would have these big experiences, incredibly powerful, very confusing. And then I would go back to my therapist and I'd be like, this is what happened. And she would be able to do integration for me and kind of help me help me do integration, not doing it for me, and help me piece together kind of all of this pieces of material that were coming up during my experiences. So that was probably about 5 years ago that I started experimenting with psychedelics for my mental health.
Wow.
So how was your first experience? Like, what, I don't want people to think like you're just doing it to trip balls, you know, right. You're doing it because of the way it, from what I've heard, I've never done it, but it opens.
Considered it.
Yeah, I have, especially when I was down the really bad path of OCD, but it opens your mind up. Can you kind of explain how that works and what you feel like when you're in, you know, I don't want to say a trip because that makes it sound terrible, but when you're on a journey.
Yeah. 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 On a journey. And I appreciate kind of the carefulness around the vocabulary. And I'll also say that at this point in my life today, I enjoy psychedelics recreationally, you know, quote unquote, as much as I get benefit from them therapeutically. And I think that with a responsible attitude, with the right mindset, with knowledge, like knowing what you're doing, knowing your substance, testing it, knowing about dose, about set and setting, a recreational experience, like just having a really good day on a recreational experience can be almost as therapeutic in certain cases, truly, as having a controlled journey. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend for somebody who doesn't know what they're doing yet to jump into that. What makes those experiences different, as I mentioned, was the methods, the setting, meaning how you're prepared, to come into this experience, the tools that you have, you know, for somebody who doesn't know anything about mental health and they're kind of just starting their journey and understanding themselves, it's going to be a much different experience than somebody who has been, say, going to therapy or who has a really dedicated practice of self-understanding and knowledge, you know, self-knowledge, who, you know, journals a lot or those kinds of things. What that feels like, a therapeutic experience or a trip, is by definition, the psychedelic experience is ineffable. It's one of the characteristics of the psychedelic experience. It's very difficult to put it into words. And so what I can speak to maybe is some of the most common effects when you're in the journey, like what that might feel like. But to speak of visuals, to speak of, you know, what is it that people see and how they feel inside after having that, can be very tricky. And it is also different for every single person. What psychedelics do, if I had to, you know, to summarize it, to say it briefly, is that they help blur the line between the conscious and the unconscious mind. The word psychedelic means mind manifesting. So it's really allowing for those parts of your mind that usually are kind of behind the shadows, that are kept in check by your defense mechanisms because they're too difficult to deal with, or they're a little scary or too scary to come up during regular, you know, consciousness. Because during on my day to day, well, I have to make dinner and I have to work and I have to tend to, you know, my plants and feed my cat. I can't be thinking about all of these traumatic experiences and just kind of having them present with me. There's mechanisms that we have that keep them in check. So during a psychedelic experience, that line is blurred. It's like the guards fell asleep, and that starts seeping into, depending on the dose, just kind of being pushed into your conscious awareness. People have the experience of kind of receiving insight, or they can call it downloads, as if all of a sudden something made sense that you had never seen it before. I know another practitioner who'll call it like the third leaf. Like sometimes you're looking at a situation in your life and you think that you only have two choices and that they're black or white, and psychedelics just kind of have, like, as if this was a plant, like, you know, branching out, and all of a sudden there's like a new leaf that comes out through the middle, and it's this option that is not here, not there, that is more integrated with the reality of the of what you have in terms of choices. It doesn't have to be as black and white. People get visuals. Closed-eyed visuals can be very intense. They are almost dreamlike. Some of them can be incredibly beautiful. You know, I've had clients who literally cry because what they're experiencing is so beautiful. Just the images that they're seeing just move them to tears. Psychedelic experiences can be incredibly positive, as in, this is the most joy that I've experienced in my life. All of a sudden I can laugh like I did when I was 5 years old, and I haven't experienced this since I was a kid. And they can be very harrowing as well. They can be, it's, you know, it's heaven and hell. Your demons might come up, and then that's what we call a challenging experience, which outside of this context can be known as a bad trip. I would make the difference that when you're in a bad trip, usually the set and the setting are not enough to contain that experience. And so it can really spiral into, you know, something that becomes out of control, which is why people, you know, end up in the hospital. Usually they're safe physically, but they are having such a struggle mentally that that they need that outside help. But within the context of a therapeutic setting, you have a control setting, somebody who's supportive, you know exactly what you took and the dose that you took, and all of that helps contain those experiences. So that instead of a bad trip, you can have a challenging experience, but that just means that you're looking at everything that exists within you in a space that is allowed specifically for that. And you have somebody who can help you do so lovingly and openly, and to hold it all, to process it all in that moment, and hopefully in sessions that come after, which become the integration.
Interesting.
That's a lot. Hold on. So you've mentioned a couple of things, right? You said your method, yeah, your set, and your setting. Can you dive in a little deeper as to what that looks like if you're someone who's interested in this experience? Like, how do you manufacture all of that?
Yeah, so that is, I think, what's important about working with, you know, a facilitator or a guide. There's maybe different levels of kind of professionals that you can work with. I would say at kind of at the lowest of the levels, if it's a sitter, that's somebody who's not really a professional guide or who, you know, they might have some experience, is basically say telling somebody, hey, can you just kind of be present while I'm doing this thing? And they, you know, make sure that they're around and can help you with whatever you might need. And then there's, you know, a professional therapist who has a certification to work on these things, which right now there's not many in the United States or in the world, really. They're just kind of working with universities trying to understand all of this because it's still very misunderstood. At the level that I work, I consider myself a facilitator, like a guide. I have training in coaching that's specific to the psychedelic experience, for psychedelic integration, for preparation. So what that looks like is the methods that I use encourage an inwards facing experience, meaning that different from like just kind of tripping, taking some mushrooms and going into the woods or hanging out watching TV, right? Which is what a lot of people used to like. This is actually a eyes closed experience. You're wearing a sleep mask and you're wearing headphones that are playing a very specific playlist that was designed for this experience. It's very evocative. It moves you emotionally, and it also has some spaces where it leaves you, you know, with some breaks in the music or like very just kind of calm music for you to be able to have a minute to, or a couple minutes to take a breather and to process what just happened. Experiences usually last between 5 to 6 hours, where people are in the psychedelic experience for usually about 4.5 to 5 hours. There's also, you know, some time to gear up to go into the experience on the day of, and some time to land. So the person will be with me, you know, for basically an entire day when they're doing their experience. I provide what I call non-directive support. So it's not like you're taking the psilocybin and I'm just kind of asking you questions or telling you, how about we think about this or move you in this direction. So actually, I'm not trying to influence your experience. I trust that you know yourself more than I know you. Who, you know, even if you've been working with me for a really long time, you know yourself better than I know you. And I trust that the experience is going to bring up the things that need to be brought up. So what I'm doing there is, when something comes up that feels like it needs to be discussed, that feels like it needs to be unpacked, then I come in as a coach and I help nudge or kind of open up the path for the client to just continue their own experience. In terms of the setting, you know, it has to be very welcoming. It has to be very safe. It has to be private. You know, there mustn't be other people around other than the client and the facilitator or facilitators. Fairly neutral, because psychedelics can be very, what's the word that I'm looking for here? When you're on a psychedelic experience, you're very influenceable. And so, you know, imagery of things that you have any kind of opinion on will become enhanced. Like the volume for everything has just been raised. So a space that's neutral, that is safe. Safety is key. Having a good relationship with your guide, and just really making the person feel that everything that comes up during that day is welcome and it's okay.
Wow.
That's a lot.
I mean, the whole idea of this controlled experience, I mean, that I didn't realize, I guess, that is something that, I mean, it seems obvious when you talk about it, right? Like, you want the idea of the sitter, right? That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But expend on that, to have it even bigger than that, is to have someone actually help you through it. And I think you've said it a few times, right? The idea of integration. I mean, is that post or during or both, or how does integration work?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think of integration as kind of taking everything, all the threads that you kind of got to pull during that experience and weaving them into something new, something that's going to affect your life. So it can be new behaviors, it can be new perspectives, because another of the characteristics, I said the experience is ineffable. It's also very easy to forget, which is surprising, I think, to some people, because it's such an intense experience. And when you come out of it, you're like, oh my God, this is, you know, it's changed my life. And then a week later, you're going to remember some of the details, but the felt experience, you know, that true, like, oh God, this was so intense that I want to make these changes, that will fade away. That's why, you know, it's important to recognize that this is still work. It's a tool, but the tool is going to give you the pieces. You have to put that puzzle together and make sure that if a piece is just kind of falling off at some point because, you know, a couple of weeks have passed or you went back to a certain pattern of behavior that it's not serving you, like that's going to push out the work that you did. So it's realizing through the experience that you have all of these choices that you can make all of this, turn all of these new behaviors into something concrete for yourself and beneficial for yourself, but doing that work. And so integration usually comes after, and that can be, it's usually for me in the form of calls with my clients the week of the experience, you know, within 2 or 3 days. And then depending on, you know, how much integration they are doing with me and how much we feel that it's necessary every week after that is, or, you know, the timing can change. There can be some integration that happens on the day of, but normally integration takes a little bit of time. It really is just processing. And for big, big experiences, it will take some time to process.
You know, of all the stuff that you're saying, I really like that you are not coloring any of it. You're saying you could have a harrowing experience, but it's always a tool that we use to break down that harrowing experience and we learn from it. You're not like trying to sell it as this thing's going to fix you.
The cure.
Yeah. Right. It's going to fix you 100%, you know, or it's the easy button for mental health issues. It's still work, but I like what you're doing and what you're saying, because I feel as if you're legitimatizing psychedelics. Most people right now are looking at psychedelics as something that hippies do. You know, they get high off of them and they trip, you know, but that's not the case anymore.
There's nothing wrong with hippies.
No, I'm just saying it's just,
I know
it's, I like it because anything that can help people with mental illness should be seriously considered.
100%.
Because there's such little advancement in mental health that anything, especially something like this, that can open your mind up and almost make you, why am I depressed? Let me look at the, you know, let me open my mind up and kind of really dig into myself.
Well, when you think back on your mental health journey, and we've talked about it a million times, and I'm going to bring you in on this here a little bit. During your mental health journey, we changed medicine how many times?
I know.
And the, what do we want to call it? The withdrawal, the fallback, the uptake, the titration, whatever the verbiage you want to use in order to get to a good point on the new medicine always took a while. So it was a painful experience for a little while. So the idea of, you know, psychedelics being harrowing, I mean, it's,
yeah,
everything is when you come to mental health. Like, right. So I don't see this as any bad points right now. It's like it is part of a mental health journey if you want it to be.
Well, I could see someone being a little resistant to wanting to go through a harrowing experience and being fearful of it. But
I mean, you would get that on medicine too.
Yeah, agreed. But I feel like. Mm-hmm. This is just another option.
For sure.
We need to legitimize things like this instead of big pharma pushing this stuff away because they want to sell more Zoloft.
Right.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much truth in what you said. I mean, I have never had to go through the pharmaceutical route to kind of manage mental health symptoms, but I have multiple loved people very close to me who have, and who have gotten stuck in that cycle where, you know, now the pill is a forever thing for them, or if it's not, it has been an incredibly difficult journey to leave it aside. So talk about, you know, we have this fear of psychedelics because for 40, 50 years, there was this propaganda that said that these are the worst things, that are addictive, that are incredibly hurtful for you. And here we are being sold, overprescribed with medications that truly, you know, when you look at the history, okay, I understand that there was some hope in the antidepressants, but the way that they're used today, we've really just kind of falling out of line with it. So this is another option, and I'm glad that as I'm speaking, it feels like there's an effort to legitimize it, because that's exactly what it is. And I agree with you that for a lot of people, I think there's different camps right now. Psychedelics are just very sexy, so there's a lot of people just kind of trying to push them. Without speaking of the harrowing experiences, without speaking of the set and the setting, because it's just easy to sell products to misinformed people, especially when there's such a wave. When people are hearing about this as a magic cure, they want to try it, and so there has to be an effort for the people who believe in it to legitimize it, but also in the most responsible way. And something, just that perspective, because you mentioned that when they think of psychedelics, they think of the hippie culture, and that's true. And I think what's something that's really interesting about them, which I've come to understand the more that I move in the circles, is that psychedelics were in the underground because legislation had pushed them there. We knew back in the 70s, 60s, even in the 50s, that these were incredible tools for mental health. There was research in the 50s and 60s with LSD for alcoholism, for, you know, all kinds of mental health conditions. And so at some point, there was an explosion. It was really more because of political reasons. They were pushed into the underground. And there they were mixing along with all of the pseudoscience that exists in the, you know, in underground movements. And so we associated with the people who believe in all kinds of things that have absolutely no scientific backing. And so now they're kind of being pulled out of the underground and into the scientific realm as well. And we're also seeing, as that is kind of coming up, a lot of the other beliefs that were around psychedelics kind of being hiked and, you know, kind of being almost brought into the light because of that. So it's been an interesting experience. I definitely came to psychedelics through a more scientific background. You know, I was very materialistic, not as in I like material stuff, but like, I don't believe in anything that I can't touch type thing.
Right.
I've certainly kind of hung out and learned from people that I would have never thought I was going to be sitting around the same table with.
For sure. And, you know, one of the things is I don't think Big Pharma can sell something that comes from something that grows in the ground. You know, they can't make buku profits off of it. So you can't tell me that the politicians aren't in that pocket, or they're not in the politician's pocket and squashing things like that, even though it's a game changer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Scary.
Before we go down the rabbit holes of conspiracy theories and understanding how the government could be impacting Big Pharma, and we all know it's true, but moving on. I mean, how would you say that you feel that psychedelics have affected your mental health? And then do you have any stories you can share with us of possible clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. I mean, for me, it's day and night. I won't say that my first psychedelic experience did it. But over the course of, you know, the first 6 months that I was doing my sessions, and, you know, as I started doing them, I learned how to do them better, and I was going to therapy, and then I would do, you know, these other sessions. I think they accelerated my therapeutic process, you know, incredibly. The progress that I saw within the first year, it was amazing. If I had to pick one thing, maybe, is reconnection to self. You know, when I spoke of kind of growing up and being in my head and being feeling disconnected from who I was and making decisions from a space that I didn't even know who was making them, that started shifting. It's like all of a sudden I could see and feel who I was and started kind of creating that connection to the self. I believe in this, and there's therapeutic theories, you know, so things like internal family systems and others that speak of the self. And the self is like this indestructible diamond. Like when you come into the world and you see a kid, like they're 100% themselves. They are pure, like as pure as they can be. They are not bound by any kind of education or indoctrination or shame. You know, they're just themselves. And as we grow up, there's like these layers of different things that get in the way that start burying that diamond, right? So I said education, trauma is one of them, indoctrination, conditioning, like all of these different things where we learn that we shouldn't be acting this particular way, and that we should, like, that we should shy away, that we should make a decision because the other person expects us to versus because we want to. All of those things start kind of burying that self. And what I found that psychedelics did for me is that they started creating a channel, like just kind of digging a tunnel where all of a sudden that diamond could start shining back again. I call it at some point, like I said, I found my Eliasness, like the, what makes me me. And not only did I find it, like I feel it radiating out of me. And from there, when I feel like that, and you can get to this place, you know, in other ways, you don't need psychedelics for that. But for me, that's what it did. It certainly can be like an accelerated path. Because they have this biochemical action mechanism. So they're truly just kind of shifting the way in which your brain works, at least for enough time that then you can hang on to that and grab momentum. And so when you're feeling yourself at 100%, then you make better decisions. Then you can say, you know what, this relationship that's not serving me, I'm going to move away from it. You know what, these behaviors that keep me stuck in a cycle, I don't want them anymore. And this, you know, you can truly be more connected. There's less space between I feel and then I act.
Where are you?
And interestingly enough, I moved to Washington, D.C. just a couple of weeks ago. I just got here. And the reason, part of the reason at least, it's because D.C. is a decriminalized state after they passed Initiative 81. Psychedelics have gone to the lowest level of priority for law enforcement. So you still cannot sell them. You still cannot purchase them in stores and things like that. But it's basically been said, like, we're not going to waste our time trying to, you know, criminalize and act on, you know, on substances that are definitely not as bad as we were made to believe, and certainly starting to show a lot of potential to help people. So it's an interesting city, and there's only a couple of places in the country where that's the case. Colorado being one of them, Oregon being one of them, but DC is another one.
That's awesome. We're from Northern Virginia, so, but wonderful. Know, we were a rock's
throw. We were
in
that area.
Yeah. Around the corner.
That's
yeah.
Funny.
That is. For real.
World.
Yep.
Well, I think from everything that we've heard from you, I mean, I think it's a benefit to anyone with mental health struggles that they're going through to explore the idea of psychedelic coaching. But I mean, who do you think is the target, if you will? Who's someone that would be most benefiting from this experience?
Yeah, what a great question. I think there's a lot of curiosity, so a lot of people, you know, want to try it out. I would say there's not one thing that this experience can gift you. It can be used for dealing with, you know, difficult mental health conditions. It can also be used for just self-development for somebody who's looking for self-actualization, even if they right now they're not if they're not dealing with a mental health condition. You can just use it to self-actualize. Sometimes you just want to use it for a moment of reconnection. For some people that never happens, right? We live very busy lives. So to take an entire day, like, you know, 8-9 hours for yourself to go to see somebody who's going to hold space for you and prepare a beautiful ceremony because you deserve it. That's also a great reason to do them. I think one of the most important criteria is openness, right? Have to be open to new experiences and open to the fact that this is going to be work, some kind of work. It always is. But if you come in prepared for that with an open heart and with an open mind, you're going to get value out of this experience.
Wow! So essentially everyone.
I believe mostly everyone. Yeah, there. Yeah. I will say, because I think it's really important, that there are certain mental health conditions that are what's the word? It's not recommended. There's a better word for it. That I'm totally losing right now. But yeah, there are certain mental health conditions like schizophrenia where they truly recommend to not engage with psychedelics because they can be very destabilizing. Bipolar disorder is kind of still in a gray area, but you know, professionals right now normally don't work with it. Like research is, there's not that much research geared towards bipolar. And so I would say it's mostly for everyone, but it's important that you consider your own situation before jumping into something like that. And a good guide is going to ask questions around that. So, you know, for anybody who's engaging with somebody who wants to offer those services, it's really important that they kind of understand what makes a good facilitator. And there's a lot of really good articles that you can find online that will help you define kind of if the person that you're working with feels legit, what it should feel like, and, you know, what questions to ask. As I'm saying that, I'm thinking that I probably should have something like that in my FAQ on my website that helps people as well, kind of, even if they're not working with me, to direct them to someone. Because it's probably, for many people, it is one of the most important experiences or most significant experiences that they have in their life. And it's also one of the most vulnerable spaces that you can be in. It's a very vulnerable experience by nature. So you want to have somebody, if you're doing it with somebody, that knows how to hold that space and that you can truly, truly trust.
Right. See, it's, I see very small amounts of negatives, if any, in trying it. There's definitely a lot less side effects from what it sounds like than Zoloft.
I mean, let's be clear. Right, that's what you're taking. Yeah. We keep saying Zoloft. Yeah, yeah. We're not picking on it. It's what he's taking. Yes,
that's right.
Yeah, well, I understand.
What do you
yeah.
want to? What do you think about flipping gears onto the fun question?
Let's do it.
If you won $10 million tonight, what would be the first thing you do tomorrow?
I think that's an easy one. I'm trying to think to see if, like, is there anything else? But the truth is, you know, you said in my introduction, I dedicate my life to this today. And the truth is that currently, there is an attachment that I have to a 9-to-5 job because, you know, paying bills is important. And if there's one thing that I do not want is for this to just become a financial, you know, that all my money is coming from my facilitation and coaching practice, because that in a way just kind of puts pressure on it. And it's a pressure that it's not welcome. It's a pressure that affects how you work on it. So if I had $10 million and I didn't have to think about things, I would just open up a practice, buy a piece of land that would you know, would become a retreat where you would have not just important pieces for this work. It's not just the psychedelics and the integration, but your community. So having a community where like wellness is put at the top priority and where people who need to heal can come, can feel safe, can stay. And when they have done the work that they need to do, then they can go.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah, I'll go.
That's a good answer.
I like it.
Yeah,
that's
a dream.
Yeah.
Well, if we win the lottery and it's a substantial amount, we'll give you that $10 million. How about that? You can hold us to it.
For sure.
Then you guys get like lifetime passes for like all of the services. Gold member subscriptions.
Yeah, right. So we talked about your business before a little bit. Where can we find you online? Where can people, you know, sign up for an appointment, learn about your services, things of that nature? Where are you out there on the old interwebs?
Yeah, so my website really would be the best place. It's www.curasanajourneys.com. And Curasana, as I mentioned, is Curasana, journeys.com. The website is the best place because although I have tried doing a little bit of social media marketing, and it's just, it almost goes up against the principles of the wellness that I'm trying to kind of build and to share. Like, I don't want to be promoting wellness on, you know, highly addictive websites that are as addicting to me as to the people that are using them. And so I've tried my hand on Instagram. You can still find my profile there at Curasana Journeys, but don't expect it to be very up to date or very, you know, yeah, I'm not going to be promoting stuff there a lot. At least that's for now. I want to stay disconnected from that. So the website would be the best place.
Awesome.
And we've been to your website. It's very pretty.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It took a lot of work and just kind of multiple tries, but I'm happy with where it's at.
For sure. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us. And this has been both educational.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, fun.
Yeah. I like
talking about something that, you know, you don't know, wouldn't expect, I guess, to be in the realm of mental health. But
we've been taught that psychedelics are the devil.
Yeah. But hearing about it, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we talk about this. Like, we have family still in the DC area. Do you want to go?
We could.
We'll go visit and we'll go check out.
Yeah. And then we'll have you on as like a post what? Partum or whatever.
Babies.
Well, if you give birth to yourself, as some people do.
See,
he fixed my issue already.
There you go. We need you here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, well, thank you guys. This has been a pleasure. It's been really fun, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this with you and your listeners.
Thanks for listening to the Unfiltered Union.
Did you like the episode? Support the show. Visit us on Patreon at patreon.com/unfilteredunion.
Or you can rock some merch. Check out our store at store.unfilteredunion.com.
For all other things unfiltered, check out our site at unfilteredunion.com.
It's what you do with the things you love.